To International Edition on the Voice of America. Coming up, Yemen's capital is shaken by some of the deadliest attacks of a Saudi-led campaign against Houthi rebels. The UN Human Rights Chief has harsh words for Europe's response to migrant tragedies in the Mediterranean. And China's president visits Pakistan to try to take the two nations' alliance to a new level. I'm Michael Lippin. Authorities in the Yemeni capital Sana'a say Saudi-led warplanes have attacked Shiite Houthi rebel targets in the city, killing around 20 people. Monday's airstrikes hit weapons caches held by the Iran-backed Houthis, triggering massive explosions that flattened homes in Sana'a and sent huge clouds of smoke into the sky. The blasts were among the most powerful in Sana'a since Saudi Arabia began leading the air campaign against the Houthis last month. One explosion struck near the Iranian embassy in Sana'a, prompting Tehran to sharply criticize the airstrikes. Well, the Associated Press says Washington is sending its warship USS Theodore Roosevelt to the waters off of Yemen to join other U.S. ships in trying to prevent Iranian vessels from supplying weapons to the Houthis. The U.S. Defense Department responded to that report by saying the aircraft carrier is repositioning to conduct maritime security operations in the region. U.S. officials told the media late last week that Iran has deployed at least 7 ships to sail to the Yemeni port of Aden to try to boost Houthi weapons supplies. The United Nations Human Rights Chief has accused Europe of a monumental failure of compassion in its response to the soaring number of migrants drowning in the Mediterranean as they try to reach a better life in Europe. In the latest tragedy, a boat carrying hundreds of migrants capsized off the Libyan coast over the weekend as it headed to the southern Italian island of Lampedusa. Only 28 people were rescued, and those missing are feared dead. In a statement on Monday, UN Rights Chief Ziad Raad al-Hussein said Europe risks turning the Mediterranean into a vast cemetery if it keeps turning its back, as he put it, on some of the most vulnerable migrants in the world. As European Union foreign and interior ministers met in Luxembourg on Monday to consider a response to that shipwreck, more migrant emergencies unfolded in the Mediterranean. Greek authorities rescued more than 90 migrants whose wooden sailboat ran aground off the island of Rhodes, but at least 3 of those on board drowned. Italian Prime Minister Matteo Renzi said Italy and Malta were working to rescue 2 more migrant boats off of Libya, a rubber raft with 100 to 150 people, and a larger boat with about 300 people on board. Henry Ridgewell has more from London.
Hosting his Maltese counterpart in Rome, Italy's Prime Minister Matteo Renzi compared the smuggling of migrants to the historic African slave trade and proposed unspecified action to target the traffickers inside Libya.
In Libya, le condizioni per far far la pace con un intervento militare.
He said the conditions to achieve peace through a military intervention in Libya at this time are not met. But, he added, they talked about targeted interventions to destroy the criminal racket that is beyond all control. European Union ministers meeting in Luxembourg proposed a 10-point plan to address the crisis, including doubling the size and funding for the existing Operation Triton patrol in the Mediterranean. The EU's President Donald Tusk announced an emergency summit of EU leaders Thursday.
Some of the topics that we will need to address as a matter of urgency are how to stop the human traffickers that cynically earn money by putting the migrants' lives at risk, how to step up our combined efforts of rescuing people in need, how to better help the EU member states most affected, and how to step up our cooperation with the countries of origin and transit.
Already this year, more than 21,000 immigrants have arrived on European shores. More than 1,600 are thought to have died. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Somali militant group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for an apparent suicide attack on a United Nations bus in northern Somalia. Local police said Monday's bombing killed 6 people, 4 foreigners and 2 Somalis. The attacker targeted a minibus carrying staffers of the UN Children's Fund in the town of Garowe as they traveled from their guest houses to their office. U.S. government agents have arrested six Somali-American men in the Midwestern state of Minnesota for allegedly planning to travel to Syria to join the Islamic State militant group. Authorities said Monday the six men had been charged with conspiracy and attempting to provide material support to a designated terrorist organization. China's president is in Pakistan on a two-day trip to promote joint projects in energy and infrastructure. The two sides are using Xi Jinping's visit to make their alliance even closer, as VOA's Ayesha Tanzim reports from the capital, Islamabad.
A 21-gun salute and schoolchildren singing anthems praising Pakistan's friendship with China began a day of red carpet treatments for the Chinese leader. President Xi Jinping arrived in Islamabad accompanied by his wife, senior ministers and CEOs of Chinese companies. He met Pakistan's top civilian and military leadership. Pakistan's Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif described the talks.
Today we have decided to elevate our relationship to all-weather strategic cooperative partnership.
He says the two countries, already close allies and strategic partners, will increase cooperation in energy and infrastructure sectors. President Xi elaborated in his remarks through an interpreter.
The two sides agreed that they will take the building of the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor as the center and prioritize and focus on the four areas of Guadar Port, the transportation infrastructure, energy and industry cooperation to form a 1+4 cooperation layout.
The corridor is a collection of roads, rail links and gas and oil pipelines going from Pakistan's southern seaport of Guadar to southwestern China. It is part of China's vision to revive the ancient Silk Road and join Asia to Europe via road and sea links. Ayesha Tanzim, VOA News, Islamabad.
A lawyer for a U.S. reporter jailed in Iran says the journalist has been charged with espionage and other crimes. The lawyer for Jason Rezaian told The Washington Post that Iranian authorities have accused his client of gathering information about internal and foreign policy and disseminating it to those with malicious intent. The Washington Post's executive editor, Martin Barron, condemned the charges against Rezaian as ludicrous. They carry a maximum sentence of 10 to 20 years imprisonment. Well, that's it for International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Michael Lippin. If you'd like to reach me on Twitter, you can find me at Michael_Lippin, spelled L-I-P-I-N. We'll see you next time.
I'm Jim Stevenson with Business News on The Voice of America. Wall Street ended sharply higher Monday after China moved to stimulate its slowing economy, while investors brought up technology stocks on cautious optimism on upcoming earnings reports. In the second industry-wide cut in 2 months, China's central bank on Sunday reduced the amount of cash that banks must hold as reserves. It's a move to help spur lending and combat slowing economic growth. After the closing bell, IBM reported its 12th straight drop in quarterly revenue as it shed unprofitable businesses to focus on cloud computing. The Dow Jones Industrial Average rose 208 points, or 1.17%, to finish at 18,034, the S&P 500 gaining nearly 20 points to close at 2,100, and the NASDAQ composite ended up nearly 63 points. It now sits at 49.94. European shares made a positive start to the week on Monday, helped by deal-making in telecom sector and that stimulus from China, although the gains were not enough to entirely erase losses from Friday's sharp sell-off. This week brings a raft of first-quarter trading updates from European companies, which are heading for their best earnings season in 4 years on the back of a weak euro and improving economic conditions. Nomad will pay Primera Advisors LLP 2.6 billion euros, or about 2.8 billion U.S. dollars, for Igloo. The owner of Bird's Eye Brand, the private equity company, said in a statement Monday, Primera will retain a 9% stake. Nomad raises about $500 million through an initial public offering in April 2014 with the purpose of funding an acquisition. Igloo is the second largest frozen food manufacturer globally, with 3.3% of the market in 2014. That's Business News from VOA. You're listening to VOA Global from the Voice of America. David Byrd kicks up a little bit of chaos on today's edition of Now, not in the literal sense, but in the movies, that is, on the big screen with one of the most popular female actresses of our time in a film that he enjoyed. You might, too. But first, Ira Melman has a whale of a story to tell in the American Cafe. No, really, it's about whales. It's coming up next.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. In the heyday of commercial whaling during the 19th and 20th centuries, the giant marine mammals were killed by the tens of thousands. By the time an international moratorium was put in place in 1986, some populations had declined by an estimated 66 to 90%. Since then, whale populations have rebounded, and they're improving the ocean environment. More from VOA's Roseanne Skirbel.
More people are seeing more whales today than ever before, says whale-watching guide Maureen Gilbert.
2 years ago, we had this huge influx of great of the blue whales that came. Last year, we also got good blue whales. This year looks like it's going to be a stellar year again for blue whales.
Blue whales are among the so-called great whales, the largest animals in the history of life on Earth. That also include gray, bowhead, and sperm whales. For many years, they were considered of little consequence to ocean life, says Joe Roman. The University of Vermont conservation biologist is lead author of a new study that found that just the opposite, that great whales have a powerful and positive impact on how the ocean works. He spoke via Skype.
So whales dive deep to feed. They come to the surface, and as it turns out, they defecate or they release whale poop at the surface. And those that has lots of nitrogen and other nutrients, so it can increase productivity in the areas where whales are feeding.
And when whales die, they sink to the floor and provide new habitat. But even as whales rebound, they are not immune to human threats in the ocean. They're run over by container ships, caught in fishing nets, and disturbed by noise from ocean traffic or sonar signals, says Margaret Williams. She directs the World Wildlife Fund's Arctic program and spoke via Skype.
So shipping is increasing in the Arctic. Plans for offshore oil and gas development are increasing. And so World Wildlife Fund is working with government, communities, industry, and other conservation groups to identify those areas that are very, very important for whale species.
Williams says whales deserve this protection. They are, as the study underscores, more valuable than anyone ever imagined to us, to fisheries, and to the ocean itself. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
Growing numbers of swimmers are trading the comfort of the pool for a workout in open water. They are known as wild swimmers. It seems an appropriate description when you consider they dive into lakes, rivers, and oceans almost any time of the year. Correspondent Tom Bonsi reports from the northwestern port city of Seattle on how the rising popularity of open water swimming is reflected in races at an unusual new business.
Sure, you'll see people taking a quick dip at Seattle's Alki Beach at the height of summer, but this is October. The salt water of Puget Sound is 13 degrees Celsius, and the air not much warmer. Hence the involuntary sound effects at the beginning of a group swim. The first one into the water is a 43-year-old tech worker from suburban Seattle, Mike Tanner.
You know, I usually swim from about May until end of November in open the water, and then I go back to the pool again and wait for May again.
And so most people would probably go to Mexico or Hawaii at this time of year, right?
I'm not very bright, and it's a bit of a challenge, and I get bored in a pool.
This day, Tanner is a paying customer on an escorted swim excursion. More than a dozen swimmers, almost all in wetsuits, trail behind an orange kayak for a 1.5-kilometer saltwater swim. Trip leader Gila Muir paddles the first of the support boats.
A swim excursion is not a race. That's the primary differentiation. It's an expedition. It's an adventure.
Muir has turned the concept into a business called Say Yes to Life Swims. For VOA News, I'm Tom Bonsi in Seattle.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. You are welcome in every day at voanews.com and many podcast platforms.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Actress Kate Winslet plays a fictional gardener who helps design parts of King Louis XIV's Versailles Gardens in a new film, A Little Chaos. Winslet stars as Sabina de Barra, a strong-willed and talented landscape architect who is chosen to create the rockwork garden that will include a ballroom. Winslet's character works with the famed French landscape architect André Le Nôtre, played by Matthias Schoenaerts.
Now you can see the extent of the enterprise.
Yes. It's a large, flat area. An arena with tiered sides.
Indeed. The orchestra will be up here.
Orchestra? Ballroom.
Madame de Barra not only has a huge task to navigate, she also has to avoid the intrigues and the backstabbing in King Louis's court. Winslet says that she had a lot to learn about formal gardening to pull off this role.
I'm not an expert gardener. I wish I could tell you that I was. I wish I could tell you that making this film turned me into a brilliant gardener. But sadly, no, it didn't.
The actress also had to overcome being 3 months pregnant when the film was shot in 2013. Winslet says that she had to use some clever costume adjustments and a bit of spycraft to hide her pregnancy.
You know, and no one knew that I was pregnant either, so I had the morning sickness, which I was trying to hide. I had sick bags hidden in my costume. I also had snacks because I was hungry all the time. So the combination of sort of constantly eating and throwing up and wearing a corset and in the mud, the things I had to hide, the tricks we had to pull off in order to adjust the costumes without anyone knowing. You know, I mean, I'm like literally snipping seams. I'm going, oh, this feels a bit tight today.
A Little Chaos marks the second directorial effort for British actor Alan Rickman, who also plays King Louis XIV in this film. Rickman says he took on the role because he wanted to say the words in the script. He didn't want to leave it to another actor.
If it's something you want to act in, the compulsion comes from saying, I want to say that line. With this, and it's a lot to do with the fact that I have an art school background and I ran a design group, and I've directed in the theatre a lot over the intervening years. Images jump around, and you want to be the person that makes those images real.
Rickman, whose last film directing job was 1997's The Winter Guest, admits that it was a challenge being on both sides of the camera.
You can't be in the moment with a fellow actor and watch what you're doing. So I suppose there's a certain watchfulness about Louis XIV and aloneness about being that man that was perhaps useful.
The director, known for his on-screen roles in Die Hard, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, and several Harry Potter films, last worked with Kate Winslet on 1995's Sense and Sensibility. For A Little Chaos, Winslet also had to endure several night scenes that were shot in the rain. Alan Rickman says, despite the difficult conditions and her unknown pregnancy, Winslet pulled off the scenes beautifully.
You know, in this film, we're spraying her with water, throwing her into a torrent at 1 o'clock in the morning. I have a photograph that I took on my phone of her when we called, yeah, okay, got it. She's up to here in water. There's towels wrapped around her head. She's holding a hot water bottle, but she's thumbs are both up, smiling.
A Little Chaos also stars Stanley Tucci, Jennifer L., and Helen McCrory. It is rated R for brief nudity and some sexual references. The film opens in Britain in April and in the United States in June. So are you a fan of period dramas? Maybe you like Kate Winslet or Alan Rickman. Let us know your thoughts by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And remember, you can email us your questions or comments by addressing them to voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd. And now a love story from a galaxy far, far away. Well, no, just Pennsylvania. Stephen Dempsey pulled off an epic proposal to his girlfriend Amanda. He put together a Lego model of Darth Vader's Imperial Star Destroyer, and inside was a little tiny Lego Darth Vader holding a glimmering engagement ring. Dempsey told Amanda, "Our love is like this ship. It shields and defends us from any outside force wanting to get in and destroy us." "I am your father." No, he didn't say that, but we will say, "May the Force be with him." It's time for sports. From the Voice of America, I'm Jim Stevenson. Lalisa DeCisa won his first Boston Marathon in 2013, but he didn't have too much time to celebrate because a few hours after DeCisa broke the tape on Boylston Street on Patriots Day, two bombs near the finish line turned what should have been the pinnacle of any distance runner's career into an afterthought. DeCisa, though, earned his second Boston Marathon title just a few hours ago, finishing in 2 hours, 9 minutes, 17 seconds. He claimed the Golden Olive Wreath and the $150,000 first prize, and of course a winner's medal to replace the one that he had donated to the city 2 years ago in memory of the victims. This one, of course, he plans to enjoy as he should. Kenya's Carolina Rotich won the women's race, beating Mari Dibaba in a shoulder-to-shoulder sprint to win by 4 seconds, as the world's most prestigious marathon took a tentative step back toward being a little bit more normal. Boston Athletic Association spokesman Jack Fleming interrupted the winner's news conference to place the trophy on the table next to DeCisa and 2014 winner Meb Keflezighi of the United States, and thanking them both for helping the race to heal. Well, Serena Williams, twice a French Open champion, says her struggle to beat Sara Errani in the Fed Cup on Sunday has been a real eye-opener for her as the clay court season now gets into full swing. World number one Williams eventually prevailed 4-6, 7-6, 6-3 against the dogged Italian to take her career record over her to 8-0, but the American says she was not impressed. The U.S. were beaten 3-2 as Williams and Alison Risk were thrashed 6-love, 6-3 in the doubles by Errani and Flavia Panetta, and that means the U.S. team has now been relegated to World Group 2. Williams is 33 years old. She's won 19 singles, Grand Slams at the Australian Open, and her dominance has raised talk of her claiming all of the majors this year. The French has been her least successful of the four, despite claiming the title in Paris in 2002 and 2013. Her doubles defeat Sunday blotted an otherwise flawless Fed Cup record and left the United States now facing a battle to get back amongst the elite nations next year, presumably again with Serena Williams. That's a look at sports. I'm Jim Stevenson.
Well, he's done it again. Grammy Award-winning jazz guitarist Earl Klugh just hosted his annual Weekend of Jazz in the U.S. city of Colorado Springs and invited some other world-class talent, such as Burt Bacharach, Dave Grusin, Lee Ritenour, Nicky Yanofsky, and jazz enthusiasts from all over the world simply to have some fun. Klugh's big hit, Dr. Macumba. With more than 30 albums to his credit and dozens of awards, Klugh never stops performing. And as he told Fox 21 TV, it's for good reason.
This really has helped me over time playing the guitar because basically I'm a shy person. But, you know, I love it. You know, I just really enjoy it.
When you think of the women of jazz, names like Ella Fitzgerald, Nina Simone, and Rosemary Clooney come to mind. But there's some new names on the scene. Nicky Yanofsky's one of them. Here, singing I Got Rhythm.
I
got rhythm, I got music, I got my bed, who can ask for anything more? I got daisies in green pastures, I got my bed, who can ask for anything more? Oh man, trouble, I don't let him, you won't find him around my door. I got stars, I got sweet dreams, I got my bed, who can ask for anything more? Oh man, trouble, you won't find him. I got rhythm, I got music.
Representing all the millennials who love jazz, it's 21-year-old Nikki Yanofsky. Wouldn't be a jazz festival without two of the really great songwriter performers of all time. That's Dave Grusin on the piano. He's written so many award-winning songs for the movies and TV and more. And Lee Ritenour, a guitar virtuoso whose talent is second to none. They're teaming up with a lot of other talent on the stage in Colorado Springs to perform Grusin's Mountain Dance. A bit undecided about jazz, you should explore it. It's worth it. There's a lot of great talent out there to enjoy. That's music on VOA Global. I'm Steve Norman.
Time is it in Philadelphia? Well, apparently it's Tebow time in the city of brotherly love. Tim Tebow, that is, who's expected to sign a one-year contract with the National Football League's Philadelphia Eagles, according to three people who are familiar with the deal. Those people spoke to the Associated Press on condition of anonymity on Sunday because, well, the contract hadn't been finalized. Tim Tebow is a rather interesting character, whether you follow football or not. He has not played in the NFL since 2012 when he was with the New York Jets. He was released by the New England Patriots before the 2013 season, and he spent the last year working in television as an analyst for the SEC Network and ESPN, that is, following college football. Now, despite being out of the league, the 27-year-old Tebow has remained one of the most popular players around. He's got a huge legion of fans who follow him, largely because of his strong Christian beliefs. He's a former Heisman Trophy winner, you may recall, if you follow it. He led Florida to two national titles, and he was also a first-round draft pick by the Denver Broncos in 2010. Tebow did play for a while. He started 16 games during two seasons with the Broncos, including a playoff victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers in January 2012. But then he was traded to the Jets after Denver signed Peyton Manning. And then, well, it kind of went downhill in his career from that point on. But now it appears he's going to be back on the field, and we'll see how the Philadelphia fans take to him. They tend to boo at most anything that moves, so we'll see. We hope you didn't boo for our show, and we invite you back tomorrow for another edition of VOA Global. Our director is Tracy Carter, engineer Zainab Abdel-Rahman and Jimmy Cook, and our managing editor, Diane Gao. I'm Jim Stevenson. Join you back here tomorrow.